Welcome. This is Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Welcome to the show. We're going to talk about money.
Daryl in Baton Rouge, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Yes, I got a question on retirement, on Social Security. I'm 60 years old. My wife is 66 years old. She retired last year. And we're getting a notice that 86% of her Social Security income is taxable. Are there ways to work that number down?
Lower your income. And here's how they go about it. They're going to take your earned income, interest and such, and half of your Social Security earnings to see what's inclusive. So you could have 0% inclusive, 50% inclusive, or 85% inclusive in income. And it's bracketed, and the only way to do that is make less money. But the positive thing is 15% of that Social Security income will not be taxed ever.
Right.
So that's kind of where you're at on that.
And then I'm going to retire in 2 years. I'll be 62. So fast forward to 2 years from now. So we're both getting Social Security. If one of us should die, does the surviving spouse get any of the Social Security of the other?
The largest, technically what happens is the largest check continues. Which one of you will have the larger check?
Myself, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, if you pass away, she gets the largest of the two checks. So for all purposes, her smaller one goes away. She continues getting right. The largest of the two checks. You don't draw off of both in any way.
Right. Okay. Well, that was the only two questions I had. I appreciate y'all's show. Thanks for the information.
Oh, thanks for calling, Daryl. Thanks for listening to Winning at Life. It's where you're taking income from, and it's something to think of strategically there, or even for a portion of time that, you know, when you pull, for example, IRA money out for income, that's taxable income. It's going to show up on the 1040 and combined. And a lot of times we're seeing, and this is where the required minimum distributions being pushed off to age 72 help some people, because RMD starting up will push up income and cause their Social Security to be taxable. Now, what they could, if you have, and this is why we talk about the three tax worlds, you know, like qualified accounts, you're putting money away pre-tax, and when it comes out, it's going to be taxed as ordinary income. Roth-like money is tax-free, doesn't show up on the 1040. So it will not cause your Social Security to become taxable by pushing up that income level. And after-tax money, there's times where clients will focus on some of their after-tax money that they've accumulated that isn't going to be taxed. You know, interest and such on it. So in an essence, you're spending some principal there while you're letting other accounts grow, and you're managing that tax bracket. And what that comes down to for individuals, let's see, if your combined taxable income is less than $32,000, you won't have to pay any taxes on your spousal benefits. If your income is between $32,000 and $44,000, you could have to pay taxes up to 50% on your benefits. If your household income is greater than $44,000, 85% of your benefits may be taxed. And that's what Daryl was calling about, that because of the household income, her Social Security is being taxed. 85% of it is being taxed. It's inclusive in taxable income. 15% is exempt. It's because nobody's Social Security is taxed up to 100% inclusive. I think that's going to change in the future as well for high income earners in retirement.
Daryl sounded surprised that there was a tax at all. Is that the mindset people come in with? They can't believe it's being taxed?
There could be at times. I can't think of offhand. Somebody said, well, I'm surprised I'm being taxed, but it's a surprise when they're probably not being taxed and all of a sudden it becomes comes tax, where it's not being taxed, and they probably think that's the way it is, and all of a sudden some more income shows up, or they make a decision or sell something. You know, they do something that creates income that shows up to affect the taxing of the Social Security. And the other part of it is the Medicare premiums are going to be affected by income essentially that you made 2 years ago because of how the IRS does reporting over to the Medicare side, where those incomes show up and can cause your Medicare premium to go up. What's the workaround? Have less taxable income, causing that to be inclusive in taxes. That's the workaround.
Well, the tricky word in there is not to have less income, to have less taxable income. So if you're getting income from sources that aren't figuring into that.
Yeah, like Roth income, non-reportable income, income that doesn't have to show up on the 1040. And I'm not talking about earned income or work income, but it could be Roth income. It could be strategies where you're taking income as a loan against, say, life insurance as example, or you're spending some of your savings as a portion of income for tax bracket management right there and bracketing for your Social Security benefits so that they won't be taxable as well.
Yeah, right. That borrowed money isn't a problem. So borrowing against your life insurance or borrowing like a reverse mortgage, that wouldn't count, right?
It would not.
Interesting stuff.
You know, it's just, it's non-reportable income. It's not showing up on the 1040. So, yeah, I've never seen loans taxable anyhow. Have you ever
paid tax I guess on not. A loan?
Yeah.
Guess not. Well, Daryl really kicked off a good conversation.
Look, this isn't to go create debt or borrow money, but it's just in life insurance, you can take income from a policy that has cash value built up and you can borrow money out of it. And there's some ways you can planning on that. But just keep in mind with that, and it's a bit more complicated than I'm giving you the example of. But when doing so, if that policy ceases to exist while you're living, you are going to have a tax bill from the IRS. Another thing, like on life insurance, if you are putting money in it and you take out, if you cash it and you have more coming out than you put in, you're going to be taxed on that difference. So if you're strategically borrowing money out of it over time for income and die, the death benefit washes that loan. And that's how you can borrow money, say, from life insurance and have income that's not going to be reportable on your 1040.
Keith, Baton Rouge, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. What's up, Keith?
I got a question about Social Security Medicare. I was told that if I'm going to defer my retirement to 70, and so I want to capitalize on that extra bonus every year that I defer. But someone had told me that at 65, I need to apply or put in for Medicare so that I don't get, in other words, it'll be more expensive if I wait to apply for that. Where do I find information on that, or is that correct?
Are you still working?
I am still working.
And you're going to work to age 70?
Yes.
Okay. You actually don't have to do anything with Medicare until you retire from work. As long as you're covered under a company plan, you don't have to do anything. It's just there is a window when you do retire or lose benefits from your employer's plan that you do have to go sign up for Part A, Part B, Part D premiums. There.
Okay. Yeah. In other words, if I waited, is there a penalty if you wait? They were just saying that I would pay a higher premium if I waited. And I wasn't sure. I was going to go to some class and I heard you on the radio. I said, well, maybe you know about this penalty if you don't do it at a certain time or something. Yeah.
Yes, actually, there is penalties for Medicare. There's always two things you have to make decisions on. It sounds like one of them you've definitely made the decision on. That's Social Security. It doesn't turn itself on ever. Even at age 70, you defer all the way to that point. You have to request it to be turned on. Medicare,
right.
You have to make a decision on it as well, and that is you have a window to turn on those, sign up for those benefits. And if you miss that window, there will be penalties thereafter. It'd be like somebody signing up for Part A and not signing up for Part B. A's the easy part. A's premium free. Part B is where you're going to have premiums, but you're already covered under an employer plan. So correct. You don't have to worry about Part B or Part D. Part D is really for the drugs, and once again, there'll be a penalty. And there's people that have in the past, and this would be probably like a James Parker as an example. He signs up for A and B and says, well, I don't need any darn drugs, so I don't want to pay the Part D premium, and he defers it. Well, when he does turn it on, it's going to cost more in that
because
example.
Because the costs always go up, right?
They're wanting everybody to pay in it. And if you're opting out, they're right. going to get you later. They said, well, everybody needs to pay a premium in that because it balances out the whole system. And if you're opting out, they're going to get it from you later. So that's how that works.
It's like you lock in a rate is what you're saying in type of thing where they'll give you that rate, as long as it doesn't get out of hand. Okay. That makes sense. Well, thank you. Thank you for your help.
Thanks for listening.
All right.
Thank you very much, Keith in Baton Rouge. You want to stick with the phones here, Gregory? All right, let's do that then. We are going to talk to Tim in Jackson. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Tim?
Hey, good morning, guys. Appreciate it. Second time I've asked for help. So apparently this year, and I could be confused, IRS had a change with withholdings as far as when you go back in and reset on dependents, et cetera. I was a little taken aback by that because it was a little confusing to me. It's supposed to be simpler, but it was a little confusing. Can you explain that and set me straight?
Well, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act changed the way the tax is calculated for employees. Withholding is the amount of federal income tax withheld from your paycheck. The amount of your income the employer withholds from your regular pay depends on two things, the amount you earn and the information you give your employer. So that is something you should review. They've got a IRS publication. Let's see, what is this number? 15, publication 15, IRS. And so it's something you could go on and look at and look for some information there. You may not want to read all of it, but it looks like it's about 50 pages of material there. So that would give you an idea of how that works and see if that's affecting you. I know we had people talk about it last year, would call into the show and was a little surprised because it actually in their cases they weren't withholding enough. And I think that was a little tweak right there that probably surprised people on the back end. Now all of a sudden I've got to pay taxes. You know what it did? It made more money show up in people's paychecks, made them feel good. But depending on how the 1040 went, in some cases, people were paying more where they are owed money at that time where previously didn't. And some of that wasn't to do with that, but some was in the way deductions and expenses, even on businesses, were taken that affected that on the back end. Well, so also, if you have a CPA that you work with that handles your tax returns, I would ask them about that as well, what they recommend.
Yeah, because before you could, and I don't know about other folks, but I could do puts and takes. I could claim 5 or claim 0 or whichever, but as long as I did the manual math on it and estimated my taxes, I usually came out pretty good, but the way that it's now it was a little confusing, so I appreciate it. And one more quick question in. Out of towners like me, Jackson, Mississippi, I can set up appointments and be one of your clients, correct?
Absolutely. And you're a little bit of a drive away, but we have a Gulfport office there in the south.
I'm down not there too far. Every couple of weeks anyway. So
yeah, I've so that works real good for you. And of course, we have our Mandeville, Louisiana, and Metairie, Louisiana offices. And with technology, go to meetings and such, right. Communication's super easy. And it's also easy just to start with a conversation if you wish. But yeah, absolutely. And we work with we've got clients across the country, in fact.
A lot further than Jackson there, yep. Tim, so don't worry about that.
Good to know. Good to know, fellas. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Great call there, Tim.
You know, one thing I was saying when they talk about the withholding there is I don't like to use that as a savings account. Now, a lot of people do. They'll set up their withholding to where they're getting a refund at the back end of the year. So they loan money to the IRS. Sometimes if that works for people, then that's a good method. I've never been one to do that. I would like to not get any money back, but I'd like to not owe any money either when it comes that time.
I used to be that guy. Not anymore. To the phones. This is going to be Charles in Mandeville. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Charles?
Hi there.
Hey, Charles.
I was calling, I don't know if it's been mentioned about figuring your taxable Social Security, because I came in the middle of that conversation, but in figuring your taxable Social Security, you have to count in municipal bond interest also.
Yes.
And so, I mean, some people might think that you can buy municipal bonds and, you know, it won't be taxable. It won't count towards your taxable Social Security, but it does.
Yeah, right. That's a good point to make, because municipal bonds have a little bit different classification, or they're treated a little bit differently by the IRS, because isn't the interest on those guys tax-free, Gregory?
Yes.
But I guess it still counts as income toward the Social Security?
Or my accountant counts it towards taxable Social Security
right.
income. So.
Right. Yeah, there's a weird duality there. Nice to point out the little loophole there. Good stuff. Anything else we can do for you, Charles?
That's all. I just wanted to mention that so people don't think that if they have municipal bonds, they can escape some of that income counting towards taxable Social Security.
I think that's a great reminder. Thank you very much, Charles. This is going to be Ray in Loosedale. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Ray?
Good morning. I'm age 74 and have a sizable IRA that I take a monthly income from, but it has grown considerably, and the mandatory distribution, does that increase by my age or by the amount that IRA has grown, or does it remain the same?
Actually, it's going to increase based upon both. They have a divisor that is adjusted each year based on age. So that basically, even if your IRA balance was staying the same, that divisor is going to increase and cause a larger required minimum distribution each year. So you've done well. So you're aging. That's good. And your account's growing. So you have two reasons those RMDs are going up.
All right. Is it possible to make a charitable contribution from that IRA to an institution without having to pay income tax on it?
The answer is yes. And that's still available. Okay. Even though, for example, those that don't have to take RMDs until age 72 now, at 70 and a half, they can still make a charitable distribution where that money goes directly to the charity and does not show up on your 1040. And yes, you can do that as well. It's not deductible, but it's not going on your 1040 and affecting your adjusted gross income.
Good. Thank you for your time.
All right. Well, that was an easy one. Thank you, Ray. You want to stick with the phones here? You got any follow-up on that, or just keep rolling?
I've got so much follow-up here, but we'll keep going. We're going to talk more about how Social Security's taxed and the callers on that, but we've got minutes left and the phones are stacked.
All right, let's go back to the phones then. Bonnie, Bay St. Louis, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Bonnie?
Good morning. How you doing? I really enjoy your show. It's very informative.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for listening.
Really appreciate your help. I'm very curious about something, and I'm kind of nervous, but I really figured if I'm going to ask anybody, I think I'd ask you guys before anybody else. My husband and I are in our late 60s, going into our 70s in a few years, and we have been taking care of his mother for quite a few years with Alzheimer's, and she went to be with the Lord in April. And now I have time on my hands, and as an artist, I haven't had space up until now, or time, but now downstairs we've opened up a big area, and I'm going to have classes. I'm going to start teaching and, you know, having classes, and I'm looking at possibly around $400 a week coming in. I want to know how much that would affect my Social Security. And another question, too, if you have any information about a 501c3, I got a little bit of info on that, but I thought maybe you could explain it better as a nonprofit if I was going to do things this way.
Well, I've got something. Yeah, we've got help for you. And actually, he's sitting across from me because next hour we have Jude Heath, which is a CPA. And we're going to mic him up right now and bring him on the air, because that's right in alley when we're talking about taxable income affecting Social Security.
Hey, Bonnie. Jude,
you know how to answer that question.
Right. So your first question regarding the $400 a week and how it affects your Social Security. You said you're in your 60s, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So before you're 67, it would start to take away from any Social Security that you're currently drawing. Now, did you say that y'all are drawing Social Security?
Yeah, but as you could sneeze at it, it's not that much.
Okay.
I think I need to do a little bit more than depend on that, you know?
Right.
That covers my gas.
And let me ask you, because I kind of got the impression that these questions were very much related. Are you looking at these classes as possibly a 501c3 option?
I was told I should look at that. You got any insight on it for me?
Well, so, you know, a qualified charity, you know, it has to have a societal purpose. And you have to send in advance determination. And the IRS has to approve of the societal purpose. And so are these classes that you're going to be providing, are they, you know, for the benefits of society?
Oh, yeah. My community has been hounding me for years and years to go ahead and start opening my doors and teach. And I would love to do that. Now I'm in a position where I can, but now I'm like a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs trying to figure out which way to go on it.
I like that saying. Now, what I would want you to do is connect up with Wes Blanchard, our attorney here at Total Wealth Authority, because there are some specifics about starting a not-for-profit corporation, which begins the 501c3 process. And so he's going to want to advise you on that. And you know, you can make a decision once you get to the numbers part of it, of which is better, to do a sole proprietorship for the $400 a week or to do a 501c3. I can help you with that. But let's get you in front of Wes first so you can help decide, you know, whether you want to go through setting up a 501c3 and answer this call.
My question, I got another question. There's a room that's off of it that was a downstairs apartment location that mom lived in, and we're probably going to be renting that out as well. I painted a 360-degree mural of the French Quarter in there years ago, and it's going to be like a museum as well, so that people can come in and have classes and they can view it and things like that. So I'm thinking this may be the way to go.
Okay. And what was your question in regards to the mural?
Is there any percentage of my home that I may be able to write off as far as utilities, mortgage, or anything like that in the process of doing this, too? I mean, this is all crazy, but I probably need to come in or sit down and talk to someone about this, too.
I think so, yeah. You've got a lot of questions, and we certainly want to be available to you, but you're going to have questions after you get off of this call, too. And so, you know, let's just set ourselves up as a team, as a resource for you, and guide you in the right direction.
I appreciate that. And I can set up an appointment. I can call another number for this or something.
Why don't you call Gregory's office on Monday, because he can connect
well,
you.
Well, that'll be Tuesday.
Oh, sorry.
Monday's market holiday, so we're closed as well. But you could call right now as well, off hours, and leave a message, because we have an answering team for off business hours. And the office number is 504 832-9200, and you can leave a message that you're wanting to speak with Jude, and we will get you followed back up with on Tuesday.
Sounds good. And you have a Gulfport office, I heard, too?
We have a Gulfport office as well. Absolutely.
Great.
And, yeah, you're over in Bay St. Louis. Thanks for listening to Winning at Life.
Appreciate Thank you, Bonnie. It.
Thank you, Bonnie.
And one other comment on the Social Security. For single filers with combined income of less than $25,000, the income will not affect or make their Social Security benefits taxable. But over $25,000, but under $34,000, once again, for single filers, it would be 50%. Inclusive.
Now that football season is kind of winding down, it looks like over in Oakland, they're already packing up everything into boxes, putting them on trucks and shipping them over to Las Vegas. And it just dawned on this columnist over at Fox Business, but I think he's absolutely right. This is a good deal for all the players because they instantly get a 13% pay raise. California, one of the highest state taxes in the country, 13% on that highest tax bracket. Nevada, zero. That's got to be a pretty sweet deal. Is that what you, that's probably what you see when you heard that the Raiders were going from Oakland to Las Vegas. That might have been the first thing that came to your head was, ooh, nice tax break.
Well, no, actually, as a football fan, I automatically thought that Vegas was a great place for a football team. So, but yeah. You're absolutely right. The tax savings can't hurt.
Now, in free agency, this has come up. We talked about when LeBron and the crew went to Miami.
Yeah.
Why did they do that in Miami? Why didn't they go do that in the big markets? They could have done it in New York. They could have done it in Los Angeles. Oh, maybe taxes were a big part of that, right?
Yeah, they avoided state income tax when they played in Florida. But they're taxed wherever they play their games. So if half the season's home games or home games, they're saving there, but they're being taxed wherever they play by municipalities, by the states as such. To
yeah,
be clear.
The jock tax.
The jock tax in that case.
Yeah, they're saving a bunch of money on those practices, though. That's where they really make up some of that money. But I think the lesson learned here is, yeah, of course it's going to be a little bit of an advantage. It's not going to be the decision maker. People aren't going to swarm to Las Vegas to play football. But every little bit helps, right? So I think the lesson learned here is this is reason number 412. We need to drop the state income tax in Louisiana. It would necessarily make the Saints more competitive, right, in free agency? Is it not reason enough that you get more money in your paycheck? How about for the Saints? Can we do it for them at least?
You know, going back, you remember back when I predicted the NFL would go to Vegas and you told me there was no way they would do that?
Okay, you were right. I was wrong.
I was way advanced on that. They'll have an NBA team there. They'll eventually have a baseball team there. And guess where the Pro Bowl is probably going to end up being played?
Yeah, you know what? You're right.
It's probably going to end up being there every year. Or maybe they'll do a rotation with, you know, sunny places like San Diego, Miami, Vegas.
To be honest, I liked it in Hawaii every year. I always thought that was a cool deal. And it's nice to remind Hawaii, you know, we own you. You're still part of it. You're wrapped up in this with the rest of us, bud. We didn't forget about
it. It's just a little bit of a hike.
It is.
To get over there might really be the deterrent in that case. Jet lag coming back, that's for sure. I've felt it in the past. Okay, let's move on to Social Security again. And people were talking about and asking questions about how is it taxed. So adjusted gross income for Social Security, and you can help out, Jude, here, is non-taxable interest plus one half of your Social Security benefits equal your combined income. And if you're filing a joint return, if your income's over is $32,000 or more, up to $44,000, you're 50% inclusive, meaning half of that Social Security check's going to be taxed. If that combined income, once again, is over $44,000, 85% of your benefits may be taxable. For single filers, it's above $25,000 is 50%, above $34,000 is 85%. inclusive. And, you know, I was looking at another calculator here that kind of lists if you're plugging in those that information. And on the calculator, they're asking for, you know, for modified adjusted gross income, long-term capital gains, short-term capital gains, dividends, taxable interest, tax-free interest, pension benefits, taxable IRS distribution, other taxable income, wages, self-employment income, deductible IRA contributions is asked for on that calculation. And then, of course, it asks for Social Security benefits. So what are your thoughts, Jude, on that whole list I just read off there?
Well, usually what we find is that for folks that have those variety of varied income streams, it's usually they have enough income. It's at the max, which is 85% taxable at Social Security. So, you know, when you're talking about dividends, interest, even, you know, like the caller before, in the last hour talked about municipal interest. You know, those folks, a lot of them are seasoned investors. They've been investing. They've got probably got some rental property and things like that. You know, a Schedule D with some stock sales, or at least some mutual fund capital gain distributions at the end of the year. Those folks are not going to have usually any problem getting to the max income, either single or joint, and being totally taxed at 85%.
Yeah, and just Social Security income in the household can get you to be taxed. You know, if each of them are drawing $24,000, that's $48,000 a year, so that's getting them in the mix.
Oh, absolutely. You have to plan for right it there. When you do your estimated tax payments in every quarter.
Now, we also had a caller earlier last hour kind of asked, how can I avoid being taxed on Social Security? I gave him a real simple answer. You have to lower your income to get below that, and it might be tax bracket management's part of that, or where are you taking income from, and you want to utilize areas or income sources that aren't going to show up on the 1040, like spending some of your savings account instead of pulling out of the IRA. But that's probably deferring a problem because of RMDs, required minimum distributions, are going to start up later. But, you know, here's kind of six tips. Stay below the taxable thresholds. So that's, once again, managing tax brackets. Manage your other retirement income sources. Consider taking IRA withdrawals before signing up for Social Security. Save money in a Roth. It's not going to show up on the 1040. Factor in state income taxes and set up Social Security tax withholding, and you won't have a big shock at the end of the year for that bill. You know, Stacy was telling, Stacy's my wife, and she was telling me about a story last night. This guy had picked up a couch from, he was building out his man cave, and one of those places that, you know, people would donate furniture and stuff. And he went and bought this couch.
Is this the beginning of a joke here, Jude? Is this like a dad joke we're running into?
No. Okay. No. This is for real. And I don't have the exact number information, but she was telling me about it last night. She was reading the article, and the couch wasn't comfortable. And so, and he had mentioned it, I think, to his daughter or whatever. They started checking into why, you know, it just wasn't comfortable. So they got the cushions out, unzipped one of the cushions, the one that was kind of having the lumpy problem. I think it was like $46,000 stuffed into that. Unbelievable. If you're giving away your furniture, you might want to check, see if somebody's been stashing money inside.
Well, you know what happened there. Either mom or dad died, right?
You actually hit the nail on the head. The guy was like, didn't know what to do. He sought legal advice, and they said, you know, you do not have to return that money. But he couldn't sleep well at night, so he reached out to find out who donated that furniture, and they connected it to the lady that donated it, and I believe it was her dad that died, and they donated the furniture.
Maybe I'm a piece of garbage because I could have slept just fine. I don't think I would have missed 1 minute of sleep.
Well, I hope he got a finder's fee and that. And if he held a little bit back for a finder's fee, I'm good with that.
Is that what that's like, having a conscience, guys? Is that what it's like? So
yes,
weird.
Yes, James.
Here's the takeaway I have from it, though. If Grandpa ever gave you a Christmas gift and you're like, wow, that's really nice, where'd you get that? And he said, it fell off the back of a truck. Whenever he dies, check all those couch cushions, because that sounds shady right there. And it sounds like Grandpa might have been up to something that wasn't completely above board. I'm just not trying to disparage Grandpa there, but...
Maybe, James. I mean, we have to look at it, you know, give Grandpa the benefit of the doubt. I mean, maybe he just wasn't comfortable with the market.
True. You know, it's one of those guys that grew up during the Depression, didn't trust banks, one of those guys.
Yeah.
That's not my theory. That's Jude's theory.
Crazy story.
All right. To the phones we go. How many calls can we get from Loosedale in one day? We're testing the record. Here's another one. Mike. Loosedale, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks, talking to Gregory, Jude, and James. How can we help you, sir?
Okay, I'm about to receive like a gift of $100,000 from my son, and right now the wife and I are both on Social Security, and I wanted to know if that can be transferred over, gifted to me, or what, without having to pay taxes on it.
Yeah, Mike, the gift tax is paid by the person that gives the money. And it's not income to you.
Exactly what I thought. That's not going to affect his Social Security. Depends if he has some investments or earnings from that money will factor in to that. But that gift will not affect you, Mike.
Okay, that's what I wanted to secure up. You know, just to, you know, just see right out of cashier check, or they just transferred over there. I don't want to have, you know, I know that most banks, if you put in too much money, you know, they start reporting it to IRS.
Yeah. Is there any reason he wouldn't just write you a check for it or transfer it directly?
No, there's no reason. I mean, that's what he plans on doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't go and say, well, bring me a sack of cash. I wouldn't do that. That's where alerts start going off.
A cushion of cash.
Or a cushion of cash. Here's my sofa cushion. It's full of money for you,
hey,
Dad.
Hey, Dad, why don't you borrow my love seat?
That's a good son, though, Mike.
Well, congrats on that, Mike.
He had a stroke from an accident, and I spent 2 years recuperating him, and he's just kind of compensate me for it.
Well, that's awesome.
Both of y'all. Yeah.
Awesome, and glad he's doing better as well. Good news.
Oh, yeah. He's about 90% back to normal.
Wow.
Good to hear. All right. Well, thanks for thinking of us, Mike. Good luck on your new financial situation, and call us if you have another one coming up in the future, bud. All right.
Is that phone number still good to call your office?
Yeah, that's 504-832-9200. And they'll take your information if you want to speak with our team. We'll business hours start back on Tuesday after the holiday. But yeah, you could call now and leave a message, and my team will follow up with you on Tuesday.
Now, did you get the office number, Mike? Because it's different than the show number.
Right.
Yeah, I've got it. So, okay. Yeah, I'll give you a call because I have an estate planning I want to go over or discuss.
Okay. Awesome.
Perfect.
Right. Look forward to hearing from you. Yeah, that office number again is 504-832-9200. And if you're wanting to reach out to Jude, you can reach out through us. There's a place for the Total Wealth Authority on our website, gregoryricks.com, and you can go through the website to make a connection with us as well.
One more call from Loosedale, and it will set our new Loosedale show record. We've never gotten more than two in one show.
Okay, so last hour, we also had a call regarding withholding and exemptions, and there were some complications last year because calculations were changed, and some people ended up owing money because of that, and then because some of the tax deductions and all changed, surprised people. So what are you advising regarding review of the exemptions? I've got publication 15 pulled up here. It's about like 50 pages, a lot to read through. Do we need to get that and read through it, or can you like help us with that?
Oh, of course I can help you. So Gregory's absolutely right. You know, when the law was put in place, the W-4s for a lot of big companies especially were not changed. And, you know, if you had folks that were claiming married in 6 or married in 4 or something like that. And then they got
I think he said he had something like 5.
Yeah. And, you know, under the new law, you just don't get married in 5. Number one, the standard deduction went up. A lot of people aren't itemizing. They're refinanced at lower interest rates. Mortgage typically is a segue to itemizing. Number two, for the families, the kids aren't worth as much. And so, you know, always, you know, the kids were another number, another exemption on the allowance on the W-4.
And it's not there anymore.
Right. And so what we normally do, now we're a year further into it, so we've got the 2018 return that we can look at, and we can look at the current year pay stub. And without going through the W-4, I will go through W-4s for folks, but the new W-4, like I was telling Gregory in a break, is complicated. It's like doing your taxes over again. I think that's might be what that caller was looking at. And so what I usually advise people is, let's start with married in 0, single in 0, and see. I know Gregory doesn't like to build a savings account, but for the most part, with the new standard deductions being so high and the children being worth a little bit less, that gets you pretty close. If at the end of the year you got a couple of $1,000 refund or you owe a few $100, you know, that's almost a dead hit. And so that's what we're looking at. Now, if at the end of the year, if single or married in 0 gets you a $5,000 or an $8,000 refund, then yeah, that might be something that we look at and drop down to a married in 1 or a single in 1 or a married in 2 or something like that. But especially when you have both husband and wife working, that has to be considered.
Yeah, and actually the form has changed, I'm reading here, that it doesn't, it no longer asks employees to report number of withholding allowances they are claiming, but there are 5 steps on there helping them figure out how to calculate their withholding. I'm not totally against having some money back. I think a lot of people plan that way, but with the changes, there's some surprises and they probably need to go in and look. Is that a requirement that they go in and look at that now? Or should they come, hey, I need to take a look at my withholdings?
It's not required that you change your W-4 at work.
Okay. But probably should be looked at.
Absolutely. Okay. Every year, especially when you owe or when you get a big refund. What we're looking for there is big variances. If you owe $500, write the check. But if you're getting back $8,000, you might want to have a little bit more in your paycheck during the year.
Yeah, that might help on a monthly basis. Yeah, money now.
All right, is some of these changes that you talked about, how the W-4 changed, that comes from the Tax Cut Act from a little over a year ago, right?
Yes.
Now, is this getting changed with the new law that just passed in December? The SECURE Act was rolled into the spending bill?
No.
All right, well, good. Nice, solid answer there. So we've had SECURE Act changes, though, hit IRAs and 401ks and a little bit of estate planning here. Did y'all get any sort of guidance on things that are going to change in your office or the accountants of the world looking at something in the SECURE Act?
No, the SECURE Act mostly was obviously for retirement purposes. And so the main thing is planning going forward. There wasn't too much juice that affected the current year.
Well, let's address something else. We're about to go to break, but qualified charitable deduction distribution allows the exclusion of income. QCDs can offset RMD income. So that's something where people can, instead of taking the RMD, they can donate that to a charity and it doesn't show up on the 1040. Just a little bit of clarification on that call earlier. There is an earnings test, and that number last year was $17,640 if you turn on Social Security before full retirement age. So if you earn over that amount last year, for every $2 over that, they take back $1 and credit it to you to get later. 2020, that number goes up to $18,240 for the earnings test.
Mark Gulfport, you're on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks, talking to Gregory, hey. James, and Jude. How can we help you, Mark?
Well, I've got a couple questions. My wife and I bought a new car this year. We paid off the car we had and bought a new car, and I was just wondering how that would affect us on our taxes this year.
Is there any write-off there, Jude?
Well, you need to capture the sales tax That goes as part of your state and local tax calculation on Schedule A. So make sure to save a copy of that bill of sale.
Okay. Now, does paying off the car help us at all?
No. And just to be clear, do you have a business?
No, no. We don't have a business.
No, no. Paying off the car doesn't help you at all.
Okay, but the sales tax on the new car will help us.
It needs to be figured in your state and local tax calculation on itemized deductions.
Now, my other question is, we decided to invest $25,000 in a CD. It's a three-year CD, and it pays 2% for the first year, 3% for the second, and 4% for the third. And I was wondering if that is a good investment or not. And
two,
how
three, and four?
Yeah, two, well, three, and four. For the 2% for the first year, 3% for the second, and 4% for the third year. Is that a smart way to do a CD?
Well, if you're considering the average over that, how is it credited? Is it simple? Is it simple interest? Does that yield compound on that? That's a couple of questions I would have.
Okay, I believe it's simple interest. How do they calculate that?
Simple interest is, how would they calculate that, Jude?
Simple interest is purely not compounded. It's the interest rate times the investment over the period of time that it calculates a simple. So if it's a 6-month simple calculation or a 1-year simple calculation, 3% times the value, 4% times the value, that's the interest. It's not compounding the interest.
On a comparison go ahead.
So it's just, so for the first year, they'll calculate it at 2%, and then they take that interest away and then calculate 3% against the principal. Is that right?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if they did it that way or if they included the interest into the calculation for the other 2 years. Do you know what I mean?
That would be compounded interest.
Yeah. But, you know, to your core question, does that sound good? You know, those numbers sound good because I'm looking here online at Ally's CD rates on a 3-year. Over $5,000, it's 2.05. Over $25,000 is 2.10. And you're getting a 2, then a 3, and a 4.
Right.
Hey, that sounds like pretty good math there.
Okay. All right.
Short-term savings.
Once the CD matures after 3 years, is it a good idea for us to just go ahead and reinvest in that, or should we do something different?
I would shop rights at that time. That's 3 years out. I you know, you're making a judgment on now for that 3 years. I would take a look at the landscape 3 years from now before making a commitment. And you shouldn't have to make a commitment now on what you're doing 3 years from now. You're doing a 3-year deal and revisit it.
Okay. All right. Now, I've actually got one more question, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I've been listening. I listen to you every week, and I've heard you talk about income for life kind of things. How do you go about that? I mean, I'm on disability. My wife is still working. She will retire in 2 years at 65. And she has retirement income through her work, and she's got a 401k through her employment. How do we go about doing income for life?
Well, it depends on your sources of income and how you invest that. Now, you know, if you're using, say, fixed annuities with income riders, you can create income that will run the rest of your life with spousal continuing with both. Or we're managing assets based upon some assumptions on yield and taking income from that the yield or return supports that. So really, fully answer that would probably honestly be where we need to have a longer conversation and find out what your needs are and expenses are and what's the capability of assets that can be generated that's reasonable to support that. Once again, a much longer conversation.
Right.
So Yeah. So I'd suggest give my office a call, my daytime job, and we can see about helping you with that and go a little bit deeper for that and give you some guidance and some help. All right. That office number is 504-832-9200, gregoryricks.com.
Boy, a lot going on there with Mark. You want to stick with the phones? Anything to add?
Absolutely.
Let's just keep it moving then. Yeah. Let's do Richard on the West Bank. You're on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks, talking to Gregory, Jude, and James. How can we help you, Richard?
Yeah, my wife just recently found out that she's going to lose her job in a few months. And basically, I'm kind of in a mode where I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to replace her income just in case she doesn't find a job pretty soon. So I'm wondering if it'd be a good move to take a refinance on my home. I have minimal credit cards because what I did was I took out a loan against my 401k, and I've been paying that back, and that's worked out for me in the past. And just wondering if, just to minimize and simplify everything, go ahead and take out a refinance on the home and free up some cash. Also, what would happen if we did take out a loan on her 401k? What's worse, if you don't take, whether you default on the loan or if it's something like, where you take out a hardship loan.
Sounds like he's talking about borrowing money out of the 401k that she has at the job that she's going to lose.
Yeah, that's not a good idea because when she separates, that would be taxable. Yeah,
that's one of the concerns. Now, if that business is closing, what's happening to that plan? Does that plan go away? Is that plan being shut down? Probably so. One of the things is depending on how long window that they have, if she's over 55, she can take distributions from that 401k and not have the 10% early withdrawal penalty. But if they're taking a loan and they can't put that money back and that plan closes, that is a forced distribution of that plan. And depending on her age, it might have 10% penalty as well on that. That's something you probably, once again, I'm not pushing you guys to call me out there, but this is something where you might want to get a bit more guidance on your options there regarding how to take income or to shore up things so you're not getting hit. All of a sudden you borrow money and the next thing from the 401k, I used to tell a story about a guy, had cheap interest in his 401k and he borrowed money to buy a car and then he lost his job. And then all of a sudden that was counted as a distribution. He's looking at doing a number of things because the wife's losing the job, refinancing the house, potentially borrowing money out the 401k. And that's kind of hazardous because there's a 10% penalty there. So it's just, we'd like to talk more about that as well. We've got Ryan from Kenner. You're on the Winning at Life hotline. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, so I'm in a situation where me and my wife are just starting to pay off like all our debts and start putting towards retirement. But the situation is that she is 11 years older than me. So I didn't know if there was anything special that we should be doing outside of the norm or things we should know going forward to plan for retirement with that age gap.
I still think the core thing is you need to prepare for retirement. You need to expect to live long in retirement. And a lot of times it's the reverse. We've seen situations, I'd say more often, where the wife, the female, is younger than the husband, and this is reverse roles. So we've got to think about that when you retire and assets are moving on, we're covering an even longer period. So like if she's retiring, I'd say, say she retires at 60, hypothetically, that you have to look at, that's 30 years of retirement off those assets. And we bring you into the picture. That's almost like saying this money has to work for 40 years or so in that case. So that's some of the thinking there. Maybe 50 years, because life expectancy is increasing by 1.6% every decade is the expectation. So, you know, you're going to have to think about a long period of preparation. So it's important in what you're doing is getting rid of debt and focus on saving for the future.
Okay. Still there? So do you think it's better to focus more money into hers as opposed to mine, or mine as opposed to hers? Because if it's more in mine, they'll have longer to grow, but or maybe more into hers so that we can get access to it earlier.
That is a point to get access to it, but you're still, I kind of look at it as household income, knowing you're probably focusing on hers more, but are you still working? Will you have enough income to cover that and not have to touch hers when she retires? So it depends on how you're seeing things play out. And are you seeing it, well, when she retires, she's got to have money to cover her expenses and needs. So it depends on how you're planning the household income going forward on where you should focus. But knowing that if she's retiring and you need to get the assets, she will be on, say, age 59 and a half. So there won't be penalty on top of taking that qualified money. So, you know, that could be one reason to focus there if you are going to need to lean on those assets. Any thoughts, Jude?
Gregory and I kind of one mind on this is that when you have retirement vehicles that are available to you, either at work or if you do something individually, that you, the first step, you know, as a couple you want to get to is maximizing those retirement vehicles, whatever the limit is annually for that. And so if you and your wife both can get to the point where you can maximize whatever is available to you, if it's an IRA or 401k at work or whatever, you know, then we can talk, or you can sit and talk with Gregory's folks a little bit more about, you know, whether something should be allocated more towards her or to you because you've got 11 years longer to retire.
Yeah, I like that, Jude, where they should be maximizing all opportunities. You might say, well, I'm not going to focus too much on mine. We'll max hers. You may not get enough money put away by just focusing on her options, but you need to think about saving pre-tax money through company plans and such. You need Roth money put away, and you need to save some after-tax money as well. So you can kind of manage taxes through three tax worlds in the future. Hopefully that helps, Ryan. If we can, you know, give me a call at the daytime office or website's gregoryricks.com. Lenny from Mandeville, you're on Winning at Life.
Yeah, I've got a question about Social Security. Both my wife and I are the same age. We'll be 68 this year. We're collecting Social Security. And her mother recently passed away, and she'll be getting an inheritance of Exxon stock that it generates about, I don't know, $13,000 to $15,000 a year in dividends. And she was just going to continue to collect that from Exxon. And she'll also be getting maybe $100,000 in cash. Does that affect our benefits?
The dividends could affect and cause Social Security's taxing level to change. The cash, not so much so, unless there is some tax liability, because if it isn't taxed, it's going to be tax coming. If somebody's got to solve the taxes on that, but the estate handling of that, that succession should solve that, not create any exposure directly to you. But the dividends could push you into a taxable situation. How much income do you have outside of Social Security now?
Well, right now, I think we're paying on about 50 or 60% on our Social Security. So this will push us probably to, what is it, 85% now?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm sure this will push us to 85%. But what I was curious about is, does the Social Security Administration say, hey, you've got, you know, additional money on your 1040 now, we're going to reduce your benefits?
Well, they're going to know because you have to file your tax return, and that calculation is in there for the Social Security. There's a formula and there's a form for that. They're going to know it's going to affect you if you breach that next threshold on the 1040.
But I think he was asking, are they going to reduce the actual retirement benefits? And that's a no.
They're not reducing the retirement benefits because you have income. You're 68, you said. There's no threshold. You can make as much money as you want, and it will not affect Social Security benefits.
Okay. Even though it's unearned income, it's going to show up on the 10-4. That was my question. Are they going to...
No matter how the earnings are, is not going to affect. It can be all interest income. It can be earned income, rental income. You're good there. Thanks for the call, Lenny.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good stuff. All right. Anything to follow up on that? Jew, Gregory, we're still good? All right, let's do Brian in New Orleans. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Brian?
Well, I had sort of a tax question. So I've decided to start a business buying and selling properties. I buy them from the tax sales and resell them. I bought two last year as a trial run and sold them just personally to see how it would work. And then, you know, it went well. So I decided to do it as a business. I set up an LLC at the beginning of this year and I got up a couple more, but I'm now, just before I continue, my LLC and the business is actually Mississippi. So I don't know if the laws are different or not for tax purposes, but my main question is, I'm selling them as, you know, rent to own, owner financing, whatever terminology you want to use most of the time. I'm making a lot of profit off of them. And I'm trying to figure out how that would get treated for tax purposes, whether it would be considered like rental income or whether it would be a capital gain, as if, you know, I said buy a property for $10,000 and turn around and sell it for $20,000. You know, how would that be treated for tax purposes?
Yeah, so are these people that you're selling rent to own, they're paying you over time for this?
Correct. And I'm doing, my contracts are set up, the ones that I've done so far, they're set up for 3 years.
Okay, a 3-year payout. And so you've done two, and you're looking at expanding this, but you'd like to try to not make it ordinary income, but keep it at the lower capital gains tax. Your best bet, Brian, and you can call the office to get a little bit more information. Your best bet is to do an installment sale. Installment sale allows you to pay capital gains on what you receive that year, and so you get to spread the capital gains out over 3 years. There's a special form you have to fill out on taxes to record on your tax return to record that.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, well, that helps. Probably, you probably should talk to the CPA. Jude Heath's a good one right here in the New Orleans area to talk to. That gets complicated.
Yeah. 832-1873, jheathcpa.com.
All right. Thank you very much for your time there, Jude Heath. We'll get to some of this stuff you prepared next time you're in, because this looked important.
It is important, but it was a busy calling show, and that's nice.
And we've got an email here. Marion reached out to us. My mom passed away in August of 2019. I inherited her house, which I am now selling in February 2020 on a cash sell basis. Would my step-up basis for the income tax purposes be the price of the house is selling for, or would I need to get an appraisal to establish the step-up basis? And they said, thank you so much for your help. I listen every Saturday and learn so much. Marion, thank you for listening. And yes, you should look, when you're inheriting a property, or you have a, you know, if your siblings, if you have somebody that is going to leave you a house that has died, and that's happening through succession, one of the core things I always suggest you do is get an appraisal on that property. Because basically what's happening is, on the date of death, there is a step-up basis. So if you're selling, and I don't think there was any prices mentioned here. I didn't read any of that. Let's just say they had acquired the house for $50,000 and they died. So we get an appraisal and the value is established at date of death, $100,000. And now a year later, hypothetically, you're selling the house for $110,000. You're going to pay taxes on that $10,000 in gain, not the $60,000 or taxed on the whole selling price, just the amount above the step up basis there. You know, and I always suggest you refer to your CPA or tax professional to make sure of everything. But once again, real estate, just like stocks, have a step up basis when you're inheriting those assets. So, and it's kind of tied to date of death to have that valuation.
Good stuff. Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you for the rare email. from Marion. So if you want to call in, 504-260-0995, if you want to do it the old-fashioned way, the old call-in. Anything else from the app before we keep it moving?
And there's, let's see, caller-stated ad. Something is wrong regarding some ad. Wanted to give advice on the radio ad. We're getting a lot of calls into the office. People are seeking some help next week, asking questions. My office number, if you're looking to say, hey, I want to find out more, I want to get some help, I want to have a conversation, my office number, and Monday's a holiday, so we'll be back at it on Tuesday, but that office number is 504-832-9200, and the website is gregoryricks.com. I've got an interesting stat here, James. For the first time since April of 2010, women make up the majority of the U.S. workforce. At the end of December 2019, there was 76.246 million American women working full-time versus 76.137 million American men. In the past 12 months, 1.52 million women, working women, have secured jobs, more than double the 586,000 men that have joined the workforce. I would say women are joining the workforce in droves this year. Once again, I think it goes to what we started off this hour with, talking about the success that's happening. This economy, this country is doing well. People are at work. And I'll give you a different way to look at that. Let's see. I've got another stat here regarding bank foreclosures on 143,955 homes nationwide in 2019. So the banks have foreclosed in 2019 on 143,955 homes nationwide. Okay. That's down 37% from 230,305 foreclosures in 2018. And that's down 51% from 291,579 foreclosures in 2017.
That is incredibly good news.
What that tells me is things keep getting better. Less and less people are losing their homes each year. That, once again, a couple of different numbers there just kind of tells you how well things are going. I feel for those that have lost their homes, but it's less people each year. 51% less than 2 years ago. Tremendous.
I don't want to get any political theories thrown out there, but you can probably already see which direction my mind's dancing at this point. I wanted to bring you the financial backstory on something that has been making the news, where you're kind of like, yeah, I don't really care. But you'll care about the financial backstory on this just because the purposes of the show. Prince Harry and his new princess, Meghan Markle, they're talking about moving to the United States. But not just moving to the United States, renouncing their royalty, basically. They're giving up their thrones. This is a financial decision, Gregory.
Oh, I thought that immediately. Imagine you get on social media and all this. Look at the money the Kardashians make. Imagine if royalty could get out there, putting their names on stuff, selling stuff. Oh my gosh.
Well, I know
they would probably have a chance to become billionaires.
I don't know if you remember this level of specificity, but we predicted this when the wedding was happening, because we learned that if you're an American and you go overseas and you get a job, you still have to report that income and pay taxes to the IRS. That's almost unheard of. There's only like three countries that do that. The United States is one of them. Almost no other country does that. So if she goes over there and she opens a joint bank account with Harry, and there's, you know, more than $10,000 in it, that has to be reported. When she files her taxes, the royals' finances are going to go to the IRS. And oh, you don't think it might leak out there? So I think they're putting a wall of legal separation between the American and the rest of the British royal family for financial reasons.
But the royal
reasons.
Family, the Queen, you know, is referring this as a crisis. But I think if this, they're stepping away from the control. I think it's even more than the taxes. I think it opens up the money-making opportunities they have because they're world famous.
Totally agree. Totally works on both ends. Absolutely. it's money.
A tremendous opportunity.
It's not, because look, it just seems so bizarre. Like, how scared would you be if you married a woman who's so hard to please, being a princess isn't good enough for her, right? Just the concept sounds hilarious, but really the money behind it, we know why they're really doing it. Bob, New Orleans, you, sir, are on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Bob?
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. I wanted to know what you guys thought, if as a way to go, I am debt-free, I have some money, I have a mortgage I'm still paying on, and I'm a contract engineer, so I can put money towards a 401k, but there's no matching. So would I be better off to do that for retirement, or take whatever extra money I have now and pay off my mortgage?
So you're self-employed then?
Well, I work for a contract house who will allow me to contribute to a 401k, but there's no matching. So
okay.
I get paid through a contract house.
Well, one thing about that is contributing to a 401k, you're putting money away pre-tax. It reduces your taxable income. So that's, you know, matching and stuff is lagniappe to it, but you're taking money off the taxable table, putting it away. The other benefit to the 401k on money that you put in there is it's going to grow tax deferred. The other option is it may have Roth options there. So once again, you could put a great deal of money into that, but you would be taxed on those contributions because Roth, you know, is an after-tax contribution, but grows tax-free if left there long enough. So that, I still think that's a great idea, but I also believe, you know, saving money pre-tax, creating some tax-free money to grow, like in a Roth as an example, and some after-tax savings, saving all three tax worlds. But that is an opportunity that you can put. Are you over 50?
Yes.
Yeah, so you can put, this year it looks like you could put $19,500 into that 401k, and your catch-up for being over 50 is $6,500. So you can sock away a great deal of money into that.
Okay, sounds great. Okay, good. Thank you.
Hey, awesome. Congrats on that, having that opportunity to save more money. I like, you know, reducing the taxable income. That might be a positive thing from a tax bracket standpoint as well, have to consider.
Bob in Memphis, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Bob?
Good afternoon. Thank you for calling, taking my call. I'm very similar to the last caller. I'm self-employed, into my upper 50s. My question is, I'm debt-free. Am I better served to put my extra money in my Roth IRA, or am I better served to put my money into my regular equities account? Because if I were to, something were to happen to me, can my dependents pull the money out of my Roth tax-free like I'm supposed to be able to, or would they be stuck and then the money would be double-taxed? Thank you for taking my call.
I like that question because that's an important question you asked. And if you have money in a Roth and you leave it, whether it's to your spouse or a non-spouse beneficiary, and they take a distribution from that Roth, it will not be taxed. And that's a pretty cool thing about the Roth, because if you leave traditional IRA money to a beneficiary, that's going to be taxable distributions, and they can't convert that money to a Roth. A spouse could, but a non-spouse beneficiary cannot convert qualified funds there. Bob, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, you were mentioning to Roth or to your equities account. Is that a after-tax account or a qualified account?
Yes, sir. No, it's an after-tax account.
Okay. Well, that's what I was checking on, because once again, a Roth is an after-tax account, but that money would grow tax-free. I think that's a good idea, especially if you're wanting to leave that money in a good situation. Now, is this a spouse you were thinking about or a non-spouse, Benny?
Well, right now I have a spouse. But
okay,
no.
So that
was trying to plan ahead that I don't have any debt, and so I don't want to do anything crazy with. But, you know, every once in a while you need access to capital. And if I put money in the Roth, then I don't have access to the capital if I wanted to buy a boat or buy a plane or, you know, do something like that.
Well, there's only so much you can put a year into that Roth. I believe that number for this year for you would be $7,000 that you could put into the Roth. So you can't put a great deal of money in there this year, and that probably wouldn't buy you an airplane anyhow. But always consider in investing, always consider your liquidity and make sure you protect emergency funds and money that is going to be used for big purchases in the very near future. I wouldn't necessarily expose that to risk either, or penalty, or affect retirement planning. Thanks for the call, Bob.
Thank you. Have a great day, sir.
Have a good one, Bob. All right. 504-260-0995.
First call from Tennessee today, huh?
Yeah, we started a new state. Let's go back to Mississippi. We're going to talk to Bill. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Bill?
Well, sorry to disappoint you that I'm not calling from Arizona or California or someplace. But I got a most interesting letter from the Medicare folks, I believe it was. Might have been Social Security. Could have been IRS, but I believe it was Medicare. Informing me that I was going to find my deductions from my Social Security to pay for the Medicare, the basic Medicare A and B. And I believe they also included Medicare D, the pharmaceutical. Appears to have been triggered by something, maybe too many withdrawals from or maybe just too much. I didn't have any earned income last year, but seems to be.
You're speaking of 2019. You're speaking of earned income in 2019. Did we lose him on the Medicare payments, Bill? You still there? Okay. Well, what he's getting at, he's probably in the notes I'm seeing on the caller screen, he has Medicare premium going up, and he said he didn't have earned income in 2019. He's really being, his Medicare premium is being based on his income in 2018 for the 2020 Medicare premium. Yeah, it's not what you made last year, it's the year before, because you've not done tax returns on 2019. They base your Medicare premiums on your last tax return. That's available from the IRS to provide that information. And for 2020, the minimum premium on income of $87,000 or less, the Medicare premium is $144.60. So you may have had more income in 2018 that you were expecting, and that's caused the premium to go up. So now next year for 2021, and you didn't have any earned income, you're going to see your Medicare premium drop back down to that lowest level of $144.60. So hopefully that helps, Bob, there. If you got additional question on that, give us a call back.
Stick with the phones?
Yes.
All right, let's try Patricia in Covington. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Patricia?
Yes, I have a question regarding spousal benefit. I will be retiring from the state of Louisiana. And whenever I do decide to draw Social Security either at 62 or 66, 67, how will my having retired from the state affect my spousal benefit?
Okay, you're talking about benefits you would receive from your spouse, correct?
Correct. Instead of me drawing on my my own Social Security, of course, I do have 40 hours already, 40 quarters, I'm sorry, already. But instead of me drawing on my own Social Security, can I draw on his, is my question. And then how will my having retired from the state affect that?
How long did you work for the state, by the way?
About almost 30 years.
Yeah, quite a bit of time. But you did squeeze in and get 40 quarters, so you have availability. So when are you planning on turning on that benefit? The state retirement income. When do you plan to turn that on?
Maybe in 2 years.
And when are you eligible to draw those spousal benefits?
Probably at 62, which would be about 5 years.
Okay. And the age of your spouse?
He'll be 66 next year.
Okay.
So he's going to turn on his benefit then.
Okay, so he's turning it on basically at about full retirement age.
Right.
And he would have his turned on. You could be eligible to draw spousal benefits, but it would be reduced because you would be doing so at age 62, but he would have to have his turned on. You're going to be affected by what's called the windfall elimination provision because you worked for the state and did not participate in Social Security. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that is going to affect your Social Security benefits, whether it's your own or your spouse's. And if your spouse was to die before you, it would affect those benefits as well in the future because of you haven't worked for the state program and you did not participate in Social Security benefits.
Okay.
Sorry to give you that news, but there is a document called the Windfall Elimination Provision that you can go to socialsecurity.gov and get more information. It's ssa.gov, actually, there.
Okay.
And that will help you out.
All right. Thank you, sir.
And there's actually calculators where you might have some benefit, but there's calculators at that website also to help you with that. So you could just kind of Google Social Security calculators and it will take you there. I bet you in the search engine, I'd like to avoid that. I always just say, use your search engine and find that document. Hopefully that helps, Patricia.
You don't want to get flagged by our alphabet overlords?
I don't know. Well, that's what most people use, but I want to give a little bit more information regarding Patricia's call. The other part that's affecting her probably more so is the government pension offset. If you receive a retirement or disability pension from a federal or state or local government based on your work for which you didn't pay Social Security benefits, the government may reduce your Social Security spouses or widows or widowers benefits. And how will it affect that? They're going to reduce your Social Security benefits by 2/3 of your government pension. In other words, if you get a monthly civil service pension of $600, 2/3 of that is $400 must be deducted from your Social Security benefits. So it could wipe it out. So two things to keep in mind. If you're working and you are not paying into Social Security, you need to be aware of the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset provision as well. Two important documents to get familiar with regarding retirement benefits. Let's go to the phones.
Yeah, let's do the phones. Look, they're ringing already. Mark Lakeview, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. Hey, Mark, how can we help you, sir?
Hey, guys. Here's my question, and I think it'll be, you know, quick. I know that I heard you say that once you reach full retirement age, that I can make as much income as I want. My question to you is, what if I do not reach full retirement age? I have been diagnosed with end-stage renal failure. I'm on dialysis. And the way I understand it is I can start to receive my Social Security even though I'm 59 years old, because I have a terminal condition. Is that true?
You can apply for Social Security disability benefits because of your health situation. I would guess you would likely be approved. So that's not actual Social Security, Social Security disability benefits.
Gregory, what I don't want to do disability benefits because that would limit my income, correct?
No, there is a income test for that as well. There is an amount of money you're allowed to make. What kind of income are you receiving that you're concerned about? How much?
Well, right now, and for 30 years now, I've worked as a health insurance agent.
Okay.
Very little life insurance. And, I don't have a whole lot of renewals other than the people that I've written with Medicare supplements. I lost most of my under 65 people to Obamacare and so forth. But there's always the opportunity. You know, I'm not where I can't go out and work. I can still enroll people during enrollment period. And, of course, I would have clients that do age in to Medicare, so I'm able to write their supplements and so forth. So income-wise, you know, probably about 45, maybe 50,000.
Yeah, it's right gonna it would affect disability income, and you're not eligible to turn on Social Security until you're age 62, and there would be an income test there.
If I have that, even if I have the disease that I have, the terminal illness.
Yes,
I can't turn it on early.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any exceptions to that.
I didn't know. I thought that you could, because of me being terminal, I might not be able to draw Social Security or make it to that time.
Yeah, well, you would be applying for Social Security disability benefits, and
okay,
and there is an income limit. So I would talk with a tax professional regarding this. I would probably give Jude Heath a call and speak to them about that, more about the rules. To turn Social Security on early is through Social Security disability. You're eligible at 62 to turn it on prior to FRA at a reduction, full retirement age. There's no income limits, but there is income tests even for disability income. It's not real big, but you can earn some money, but you're earning a lot more. So give Jude a call. You can look him up on my website, gregoryricks.com.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Gregory, yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey. And there's a contact for Jude. If you download the Winning It Life app, our partners, most of them are listed under the partner section on the app. You can find them there as well.
Mark, best luck to you in that situation. Hope things improve for you.
All right, so talk about how successful and awesome the Gulfport Open House was.
Oh, my goodness. It was pretty cool.
Was that Tuesday?
Yeah, it was Tuesday. And it was pretty neat. You know, we were there for some of the staff and I were there for a couple hours, and people could stop in and visit with us. It was non-threatening. I always kind of talk about it.
You never told them what it is. The Gregory Ricks and Associates Gulfport office.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And I always kind of define it that doing a social like that is kind of a wine and cheese social. And you're just coming in, check out the office, say hi to us. We're not getting into financial discussions. You're not having to sign up for anything. You're not filling out any paper. It was just to come by and see if you're comfortable. It's kind of like car shopping on Sundays. You're going out there, kick the tires. Nobody's going to bother you, but you can look around and say, well, yeah, I like this blue one. I don't like that red one. I want the convertible. You know, and nobody's pressuring you, and you can go back and talk to somebody if you're ready to do so. And that's kind of what that was. And if somebody did bring up something, I said, well, yeah, we can help you with that and such. Just set an appointment and come back in. I guess they could have set an appointment there. Of course, we had that ability, but it was just a relaxed thing to come in, and people were just hanging out. We were talking about all kind of topics, and then we were talking about stuff that wasn't even financial related. A gentleman came in and talked about us having a popcorn machine and having popcorn available next time we do a social. So, you know, that was one of the conversations, and I thought that was a great idea. And everybody loves the smell of fresh popcorn. Don't you, James?
I do.
I do as well. But we had a lot of people come by, so we're going to be doing that again in the future.
I'm sorry, you cracked me up over the popcorn.
There's a lot of other topics as well.
There was a guy that I used to work with, and we were in a pretty tight cubicle array when I was a computer programmer, and he hated the smell of microwave popcorn. And so if he ever made any of us mad, we would go popcorn.
Well, we're not going to do microwave. We're going to have one of those machines where, you know, like you go in the movie theater and you see it popping and spilling out of the bowl.
Instant happiness. Right.
Yeah, that's what he's suggesting. And actually, I have one of those machines.
Shut up. Where?
I have it.
Okay.
It's not here. You'd probably want some right now.
Uh-huh.
But I have one of those. And I'm like, why haven't we been using that? I love the smell of fresh popcorn. Not the microwave, the real deal.
We just used to torture this guy named Rob with it. He hated it. So if he made us mad, we would intentionally go pop popcorn in the break room because it would stink up the whole office just to make him mad.
So at the next open house, we're going to have fresh popcorn.
And everyone besides...
Not microwave.
Right. Everyone besides Rob's going to love it. They are absolutely going to love it. So are we doing this for the other offices? We never had like the housewarming party for the man at the office.
As a result of that, I'm thinking about doing it at the Mandeville office, and I'm thinking about doing it at the Metairie. You know, of course, we've been at Metairie for years, but it's not that, and we kind of did it as a grand opening and all, but I think the social is a good idea where people can just pop in, know it's non-threatening, and then stop in, see what, let me see if I like Gregory, let me see if I like his team, see if I like Nicholas and so forth, and yeah, they're okay. So I'm probably going to come back in. It's like for a meeting, and because okay. You know what, it's non-threatening. You could pop in, you could leave. It's super casual. Check things out. You know, kick the tires. That's so. I think my vibe from that is, yeah, we should do that on occasion, so people can just come by and see how they like things, knowing. And that's what one lady told me that was at the event. She said, you know, I've been thinking about an appointment and stuff, but I just wasn't sure. And she said, since you were doing this, I figured, what the heck? I'm going to stop in and see what's going on. And that's what she did. She sat and visited and met some of the other people that stopped by. It was pretty cool.
And it was, I bet you every person that stopped by was like, hey, where's Parker? I want to meet him, right? Everyone say that?
You actually were asked about.
Oh, good. I was yeah. kind of being funny
like,
there.
Where's your co-host?
Oh, so these are good people
I
that
said,
stopped
actually,
by.
I said, actually, he's doing the show this evening. So, because I couldn't be there, I was at the open house.
All right, what other events we got going on? There's one coming up this week on Wednesday.
We have a wine, wisdom, and food experience event at Rizzuto's in New Orleans. We're doing the wine, wisdom, and food experience Italian style. So that's this Wednesday. I think it's full, but if there's any cancellations, you can call the office and get on the list. 504-832-9200. And that number will get you in to visit at any of our offices.
We got a lunch and learn on estate planning coming up. We got two lunch and learns on social security planning coming up in February. Check out all the events on GregoryRicks.com. Your home away from the show, winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. That's where you can go check out all our shows live, watch the shows on video, check out our podcast. Great stuff. Go check it out. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest, subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.